Welcome to The Shamrock, brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna in Chicago and from Madison, Wisconsin. For now, until we unite in Chicago on Saturday, or maybe Friday night, is Jesse Temple. Jesse, thanks for being with us to talk Badgers. I think this game was sort of viewed as like the biggest game on Notre Dame's schedule since the summer. I get the perception that it's a similar vibe around Wisconsin, but after the first couple weeks of the season, what is sort of the Wisconsin viewpoint of what's coming Saturday?
There's no question it's a massive game. It's hard to say it's the biggest game for Wisconsin simply because it's a non-conference game, and Wisconsin already lost to Penn State, which is now a top 10 team. There's a matchup looming down the road against Iowa. It still could potentially decide the Big Ten West, but purely from a storyline perspective, this is the biggest in my mind just because of the Jack Cohn, Graham Mertz angle, which I know we'll dive into. And also, the simple fact remains that Wisconsin has really struggled against nationally ranked teams in the last couple years. This is a program that has been on the cusp of reaching the college football playoff, hasn't been able to break through. And a part of that is they haven't always been able to step up in matchups like this. They've lost six straight games against AP top 25 teams. This is not something the players are talking about, but just from a national perception of what this game means, I think there's a lot of significance. Even if Notre Dame hasn't played great, if Wisconsin can go in there and win a marquee game that everyone's watching against a top 12 team, it'll say a lot about the potential of the program for the future.
Guess we got to start right off with the quarterback situation. Jack Cohn kind of ripped the Band-Aid off early after the game Saturday and spoke and didn't say a whole lot about it. And not that I would expect him to. But
I'm stunned by that admission.
Not that I would expect him to. However, what's the vibe out of Madison? Has Graham Mertz spoken yet this week? And if so, what exactly has he said about facing his old quarterback mate?
Yeah, we had an opportunity to talk to Graham on Monday, and he said the same thing that Paul Chryst said, which is to make it clear that this isn't a Graham Mertz versus Jack Cohn game. This is Wisconsin versus Notre Dame. That's the first thing Paul said when I asked him about what it'll be like facing Jack. And Graham said this isn't a one-on-one basketball game. We're not lining up across the field from each other, which is true. Of course, there's much more to that outside the program. But what I would say is there's just, you're not going to find any billboard material on either side for a game like this because there is so much respect and I think admiration for what Jack did at Wisconsin. As cliche as that sounds, and maybe people don't want to hear that, they want to hear some really good juicy tidbit, but you just look at what Jack did when he was here and how he handled himself. He started 18 games. He led this team to the Rose Bowl. He entered the 2020 season as the unquestioned starter, and then he suffers that foot injury in a non-contact situation and still was there on the sideline to help the team late in the season, even after he told coaches that he was intending to transfer. I go back to the final image that we saw of Jack in a Wisconsin uniform was him hugging Chase Wolf, the backup quarterback who had helped to spearhead a comeback against Minnesota, an overtime win late in the season. And the very next morning, Jack enters the transfer portal. So I bring all that up to say the vibe is lots of respect for Jack. They know they're going to get a really difficult challenge. They also, I think, have a pretty good sense of what to expect, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And even you look back at the end of January when Jack moved in to campus at Notre Dame, his dad posted a photo on Twitter. There's five or six of his former Badgers teammates who made the drive to help him move in, and I think that says a lot about the relationships he developed at Wisconsin.
Yeah, it seems like we're not going to have the storylines of Ian Book, Phil Dracovic last year when Notre Dame played Boston College. There was just a lot more juice to that than this. But maybe that says something about Jack Cohn because, yeah, he's been a fairly dry interview so far, even though when you talk to people who know him back from Long Island, that's when you get the true Long Island New Yorker attitude comes out. But, you know, to me, aside from the quarterback stuff, this game will maybe be decided more by, like, can Notre Dame's offensive line block Wisconsin's front seven? I get the sense that from a linebacker point of view, this is a really good group by Wisconsin standards. Defensive line, Brian Kelly talked about sort of the nose guard, the sort of two-gap responsibilities that come with that, and, like, you know, even just the 3-4 under Jim Leonard, that automatically creates some interesting rush opportunities. And Notre Dame has not handled those well at all. So, like, what does Wisconsin have in the front seven? How good is that group by Wisconsin standards?
I'm working on a story about that for this week, actually. I would say if we start with the inside linebackers, Jack Sanborn and Leo Chanel, to me, are in the conversation for the best 1-2 inside linebacker or linebacker duo in the Big Ten. Sanborn's led the team in tackles multiple seasons. He's a senior. He's an all-Big Ten performer. With Leo Chanel, it's interesting. He actually missed the first two games. He was out with COVID, and he's back this week. I think he's going to be very energized. If you ever go online and just do a Google search for him, he's the dude. He'll be bench pressing 225 pounds like 40 times. He's just got ridiculous strength. One of the guys on Bruce Feldman's freaks list. But they're just very intelligent players, and I think there is something to be said for what Wisconsin's been able to do up front on the defensive line. They lost two senior starters last season and really haven't skipped a beat this year. Matt Henningsen has stepped into a starting role. And the other guy who I think Notre Dame fans would probably be wise to watch on Saturday, even if he's not racking up massive tackles, he's going to occupy space and do a good job, is Keanu Benton. He's a junior this year. He emerged as a surprise starter, to me at least, as a true freshman. He's really special. And last year, one of the things that held him back was Wisconsin operates out of a nickel defense. Last season, it was 68% of the time. And as a result, Benton was almost never on the field, it felt like. Well, now, when Wisconsin goes to its nickel, he's one of the two linemen that are on the field with Henningsen, and he's just an absolute force. I think he's a future NFL talent. So they've been able to generate some more pressure and disrupt quarterbacks. That was the big offseason focus for the entire front seven, really. You go back and look at what they did last season. Not much to be found in the sack category. Like, Nick Herbig, starting outside linebacker, had one sack last season. Sanborn had one sack last season. Herbig's already got 1.5 sacks. Sanborn has a sack. They just seem to be generating more pressure, and you can see that in the first two games. And yes, they're going to try to tee off on Notre Dame's offensive line. Jack Cohn was sacked, what, 6 times in one game against Toledo? You see that, and I think if you're a defensive player, your eyes light up a little bit. They're going to throw some schemes and twists and stunts at Notre Dame to try and confuse them.
You mentioned that defensive line. Inoki Brechtefield no longer there. Clark Lee, old Notre Dame friend, took him to Vanderbilt to be his defensive line coach there. Jesse, I mean, do you feel coming off a bye benefits this team or hurts this team because it's so early in the season and because they didn't exactly put their best foot forward in the opener against Penn State, despite defensively playing a really strong game?
This is one of those questions that if you were to ask a coaching staff, they would say whatever happened is the best for the program.
That's very Paul Chris of you to say, but go on.
I think it's beneficial simply because it gave Wisconsin an extra week to prep for Notre Dame and maybe look at the film and see some of the things that they haven't been able to do well. To me, one of the big storylines or question marks coming into this game is, can Wisconsin offensively get something going down the field? We have not seen that at all this season. Graham Mertz really struggled in the opener against Penn State, and certainly Penn State seems to be a much better team than we thought coming into the season. But he threw a couple interceptions. He fumbled twice. He was flagged for a pair of intentional grounding penalties. And then against Eastern Michigan in week two, they didn't even try down the field very much. They just ran it right down Eastern Michigan's throat. The first 15 plays of the game were all run plays. And you can get away with doing that against Eastern Michigan. And I don't know how much it was that Wisconsin just didn't want to put much on film for a game like this. If they don't do it against Notre Dame, I don't know if they'll ever do it. But that, I think, is something that, to go back to your question about the bye week, like, maybe that extra time allows you to put some extra things in and allows you to really study and prepare for Notre Dame. But I will say, I don't think it's the greatest setup, because Wisconsin now has 10 games in 10 Saturdays, and that is asking an awful lot when you go through the grind of a Big Ten season.
You're reading some of your stuff. The fact that Graham Mertz has not completed a pass air yards of 20 yards or more all season and has only attempted 4, like, is that a surprise to you? And does any of that say something about Wisconsin not having a guy worth pushing the ball vertically to?
It surprises me quite a bit, because coming into the season, I thought that was going to be one of the things that helped this team stand out. Graham has 5 of his top 7 pass catchers back from last season. He's got Jake Ferguson, who's an all Big Ten tight end. He's really got his 4 top wide receivers back. But I do think that it's a valid point that you make, Pete, because to go back to Jack Cohn, and you and I discussed this in our Beat Writer Breakdown, which is on The Athletic right now. That's my plug to go check it out.
50% off.
In 2019, Jack Cohn had incredible success. I mentioned this, to me, it was one of the most underrated seasons by a Wisconsin quarterback we'd seen in a long time, but he also had Quintez Cephus, who's now with the Detroit Lions, was an NFL draft pick that season. He targeted Cephus 94 times that year. His second most targeted guy was Jake Ferguson, 44 times. Cephus was so physical, he could dominate an opponent at the line of scrimmage and go up and get the ball. And I don't know that Wisconsin, they don't have a Quintez Cephus this year. I think their best number one option is Danny Davis. He's done it in spurts. He had a pretty decent game against Penn State. But I do think there's something to be said for not necessarily having that dominant NFL level wide receiver. And I also think, especially against Penn State, if it wasn't working early, I don't know if they just stopped going to it. I mean, Graham has talked about you've got to take advantage of those chances when they come, but it's also important to note that he might just check it down underneath. So there may be some chances there and he doesn't throw it, and you're not going to have a chance to come back to it as often as you would at, say, Notre Dame, where Jack Cohn's throwing 30-plus times every game. That's not necessarily how Wisconsin is built.
I thought coming into the season, this was one of the more, not predictable matchups, but two predictable programs. Like, always good on the offensive line, always good defensively. They're both going to run the ball well, and you know whoever plays better that day is going to win. Notre Dame, throw that out the window. Like, they've just been kind of a hot mess all over the place through three games and really hard to predict. Wisconsin, though, despite that week one loss, seems a lot more traditionally Wisconsin, for lack of a better term, as far as ball control. They lead the nation in time of possession. They're playing strong defense. No Melvin Gordon or Jonathan Taylor in that backfield, but they do have Chaz Malusi and a couple other good players. I mean, is this – I think we all, at least from the outside, thought, oh, with Graham Mertz there, with a high quarterback recruit, they're going to open things up more and be a little bit different. Is this still pretty much, like, makeup-wise, the same Wisconsin program we've become accustomed to seeing in recent years under Paul Chryst?
At this point, I would have to say yes, and I would – with – hold. I would like to have the opportunity to change my opinion if we see something more from Graham. But yeah, the first couple games, it has been quintessential Wisconsin football. This defense, elite, gets thrown around a lot, but at this point, they have the potential to be an elite level defense. I really believe that from what we've seen. The one bugaboo is the secondary not having massive communication breakdowns and giving up big plays. They gave up three huge plays against Penn State, two of which came on miscommunications, and I do think that's something Notre Dame's going to try to test Wisconsin in. But from a front seven perspective, yeah, it's quintessential Wisconsin defense, and the offensive line, very talented again. And the running game really came together, especially against Eastern Michigan. And again, it's hard to make any definitive proclamations after you watch them beat up a MAC opponent like that. But they have three guys that all bring something a little bit different. You talked about Malusi. He's a transfer from Clemson, emerged as a starter out of fall camp. He's run for 100 yards in each of the first two games. That's the first time a Wisconsin player has done that in his first two games in this program since Corey Clement back in 2013. So that doesn't happen very often. Jalen Berger emerged as a starter last year, and now he's the number two guy. Somehow he's carried exactly 15 times in each of his first five games at Wisconsin. I don't know if that is... you will find that anywhere else. But those two guys are pretty dynamic. And Isaac Arendo is the third guy. He's the fastest player on the team. He broke off an 82-yard touchdown run around the right sideline against Eastern Michigan. So, yeah, I think that is all sort of what we've expected. But it is a little head-scratching that we haven't seen more out of Graham. And I also think it goes back to Paul Chryst, who's now in charge of calling the plays again, dialing up those shots. Because as Pete mentioned, Wisconsin's only even attempted one pass of 30-plus yards this season. That's lowest in the Big Ten. Graham's only thrown four passes of 20-plus yards, and none of them have gone for completions. And this is a guy who lit up college football in his debut start against Illinois last season. He was 20 for 21, 248 yards, five touchdowns, no interceptions. I'm sure we'll be talking about that stat line for years to come. But over his last seven starts, he's got two touchdowns and seven interceptions. Like, if you didn't know his name was Graham Mertz, you would think he was just another Wisconsin quarterback. And I think the potential is there for him to do something special. But eventually, you gotta put it out there.
The Burt situation, I think, is just totally bizarre. Because, I mean, you go back, I remember Kenny Hill from, Kenny Hill from Texas A&M. But, like, the opening night Heisman winner, I mean, Graham Mertz felt like one of those guys on opening night at Illinois. You're just like, holy crap. Like, for starters, how was Jack Cohn ever the starter here? And it just like, it was kind of a runaway train from there. Like, speaking of things that don't make any sense to me, at least the betting line for this game, I thought Wisconsin would be favored field goal, maybe like a half point less. To see the line at 5.5, 6.5, did that surprise you?
Yes. I think this is, I mean, that still means it's a one possession game, which is what I think would happen. But this to me is a field goal, or maybe it's even a pick 'em. I mean, maybe people are, the thing I'm wondering is, if you look just at the scores, okay, Wisconsin lost by 6 to Penn State, and now the Nittany Lions are pretty damn good. So Wisconsin played terrible offensively, or at least in the inside the 10-yard line. They had 3 chances inside the 10, got no points, and still had a chance to win late. And with Notre Dame, and I asked you about this, Pete, my question was, is Notre Dame good? I mean, how good are they? You look, they beat Florida State in overtime by 3. Florida State's now 0-3 and lost to Jacksonville State. They needed late-game heroics from Jack Cohn after he dislocated his finger to beat Toledo. Then Toledo goes and loses to Colorado State. They're 1-2. So it's just hard to know how good Notre Dame really is. And maybe that has contributed to what we've seen in the betting line.
It's funny you mentioned that Toledo game, because as much as we're talking about, oh, Wisconsin only played Eastern Michigan, they probably didn't show much. Well, they didn't need to. They did what Notre Dame couldn't do and take a MAC opponent and make them basically irrelevant. Notre Dame had to go to the finish line with Toledo, which is personally giving me still a lot of pause with how to predict this game and how to predict the rest of this season. I want to go back to the rushing defense. We just got email as we're speaking from Wisconsin, and I feel like every Wisconsin email has some stat comparing Jim Leonard to Alabama, and this one was no different. It says, in the last 6 years, Wisconsin's rushing defense is number 2 in the country under Jim Leonard, behind only Alabama. They're number 1 right now in the country, giving up just 33 rushing yards per game. What is it about Jim Leonard? I know he's probably like as Wisconsin as it gets as far as being from the state and playing there and having a great rags-to-riches story from walk-on to NFL starter and now obviously being a great defense coordinator. But why do you think he's still so effective there? And why do you think he still is there and hasn't left to become a head coach or a defense coordinator in the NFL?
I'll start with the second part of that question. The topic of why Leonard is still here has been discussed an awful lot, because he's had a bunch of opportunities. A few years ago, he was in the discussion for the defensive coordinator roles at, I believe it was, Alabama, Florida State, and Texas A&M. This past offseason, he was offered the opportunity to become the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that, I would have to imagine. And most of us have assumed that if he were going to leave, it would be for a position, say, like the Green Bay Packers defensive coordinator job. And so when he turned that down, I think that was pretty eye-opening. But I even asked Jim about this in the spring, that he said, there are a lot of people, and I'm paraphrasing, there are a lot of people who, you know, think they know what I want to do, but he really values being in Madison, the culture, all those things. But it does go back to his experience here. He was a player here. He was a 3-time All-American. He's come back as a coach, and he's got a young family. And I do think there's something to be said for just being happy and having some job security. This is the type of position that he could have for as long as he wants it. And he talked, this is the other thing, he brought up the fact that he feels Wisconsin has what he called unfinished business. And what that means is winning championships. They haven't won a Big Ten championship since 2012. Jim Leonard was still playing in the NFL back then. They've been close. They've gotten to the Big Ten championship a few different times under Paul Christ and since Jim Leonard has been here, but they haven't been able to break through. And I also think the way last season ended, with Wisconsin going 4-3, with so many players being out because of COVID-19, with the game cancellations, it just left kind of a bad taste in everybody's mouth, and Jim didn't want to go out like that. In terms of what Jim does well or why he's had so much success, he's kind of like a savant. He's just so knowledgeable, and anybody who's read about him knows that he was basically a coach on the field when he was in the NFL. He had the opportunity to learn from some great coaches like Rex Ryan. And so some people may have been surprised when, after just 1 year of being a coach, he was named Wisconsin's defensive coordinator, but you've seen that decision by Paul Christ validated over the years. He has this really innate ability to help players understand complex concepts in ways that allow them to thrive. And I think you see that on the field every week. Players rave about playing for him and the chances that he gives them to go succeed.
From a bigger picture point of view, like, if Wisconsin beats Notre Dame, You mentioned sort of the 0-6 against top 25 teams, which is kind of surprising to me based on like how good Wisconsin's been over the years. But like, what do you think that does for their profile? I mean, you meant it has nothing to do with the Big Ten, right? You know, and it probably because I have nothing to do with the college football playoff either, because with the loss to Penn State already on the board. So like, what would that do for the season? I mean, you've got your mailbag up on The Athletic now. It's sort of getting between like what's a good season, what's a great season. I mean, does this sort of change? Does Wisconsin think that maybe this would change the way people view Wisconsin on a national level after an off-brand year last season?
Maybe. It's just a really hard question to answer because they could win this game and then lose to Iowa and finish the year 10-2 and not win the Big Ten West. And to your point about a question I was addressing in a mailbag, the difference between a good and a great season, it'll feel like just another good season at Wisconsin. Wisconsin is in a very bizarre place in the college football world because they are the envy of most college football programs. Notre Dame is not among them because the Fighting Irish have been to the college football playoff. But most teams would love to be in the position where you're competing for a conference title every year. And yet, Wisconsin has gotten to a point where if they win 10 games and don't win a Big Ten championship and go to a New Year's Six Bowl, and whether win or lose, it just feels like another good season because they haven't been able to break through. So this will probably help with the national perception that, okay, Wisconsin can beat some of these teams. I think it to me, it's more, can they do this consistently? You talked about the last six losses. Two of them came to Ohio State in 2019. They lost all three games against ranked teams last season, which was really just kind of a throwaway, disastrous season for the most part. And they lost this season opener to Penn State. They've been close in a lot of them, but they just haven't been able to get over the hump. So they'll be a top 15 team if they win this. And I think that'll be really good because they're going to go back into Big Ten play and play Michigan next week. But I don't know that this necessarily changes the trajectory of their season, because like you said, I mean, unless they run the table and somehow get back into the college football playoff conversation, this doesn't really change that much.
How are they up front on their offensive line? Relative, I guess, to the high standard that they at Notre Dame seem to set every year. I mean, what have you seen from that group through two games so far?
Well, they were certainly much better in week two against Eastern Michigan. There were some struggles, particularly in pass protection against Penn State. One guy who struggled and openly admitted it after the game was left tackle Tyler Beach, but he also was injured during fall camp. He only had a chance to practice five times going into the opener, and that's frankly just not enough time to get your feet wet, to get ready, especially for a defense as good as Penn State has turned out to be. Well, he was much better in week two against Eastern Michigan. The entire line was great. That's why the Badgers ran for 350-plus yards, ran the ball 55 times. To me, this is another classic Wisconsin line where you've got some veterans and some young guys who've been waiting in the wings. Tyler Beach and Logan Bruss are the two starting tackles. They've been there for a long time. One of the changes that offensive line coach Joe Rudolph made, which was a bit of a surprise when fall camp started, he's got Joe Tippmann starting at center now over Caden Lyles, who was a multi-year starter at the position. And Joe Tippmann was a four-star prospect in 2019. And then there's another four-star guy who's lined up right next to him at right guard in Jack Nelson, who's an in-state kid. He was so dominant at the All-American Bowl a couple years ago that 24/7 sports analysts boosted him into a five-star prospect. He essentially became the number two offensive tackle, that was his position coming out of high school, in the country because of what he did there. So one thing that I do think is different about Wisconsin's offensive line as a whole, and this isn't just about the starters, but it does have to do with some of the guys who are coming in behind them. From a recruiting standpoint, I think this is as talented of a group as Wisconsin has maybe ever had. This doesn't mean they're better, because the 2010 and 2011 lines are as good as it gets. Most of those guys wound up in the NFL. But the 2019, 2020, and 2021 classes have a bunch of four- and five-star prospects, more than we've ever seen. And you're starting, well, I bring that up because you're starting to see that come through. Two of those guys who are now starters are in the 2019 and 2020 classes, and there's a reason why they've elevated themselves ahead some of those more veteran guys.
Jesse, you had me on your podcast over the weekend, put me on the spot with a prediction, so back at you. What happens on Saturday?
Yeah, well, I think this will be a low-scoring one-possession game. How's that for going out on a limb? So whatever the over is, I suppose take the under. Not that you should take gambling advice from me. And this is me stalling while I figure out who I want to pick. You know, I think I'm going to go Notre Dame in this one. I really think Jack Cohn is going to do something that will be a difference-making play. And maybe this is just me building up a great storyline in my mind, not very good for Wisconsin. But I've thought all along since he went to Notre Dame that, like, despite the fact he won't acknowledge that this game is anything more than a regular game, I think he's going to do something to win this game. So I'll go Notre Dame, but I'll say it's 17-14. And maybe that's more points than Wisconsin will give up. I just don't think there are going to be a lot of points in this game.
Your turn, Pete.
I was on Jesse's podcast over the weekend, and I very begrudgingly picked Notre Dame with like zero confidence points. And the farther I get into the week, the harder I have sticking with that. I think, Matt, when we recorded on Saturday after the Purdue game, I was like, well, you know, Notre Dame was just good enough.
You were all aboard Notre Dame.
Yeah, they were just good enough. I was like, well, I think I got to pick Notre Dame on Saturday. And the more I just look at Notre Dame's offensive line, the harder time I have seeing them get to two touchdowns, honestly. And I'm not saying Wisconsin is going to light the world on fire, but so I'm going to go with Wisconsin. Notre Dame's not good enough to go undefeated this year, so I have to lose at some point. Saturday seems like a reasonable spot, considering Notre Dame has not lost a home game in like 3.5 years, and they've beaten every unranked team during that time frame too. But I agree with Jesse. Like, if the winning team didn't get to 20 points, that wouldn't surprise me at all. In fact, I think that that's probably what I'm going to end up predicting. So, Wisconsin 17, Notre Dame 13. Wow.
I love that the Wisconsin writer has picked Notre Dame, yeah, and the Notre Dame writer has picked
Wisconsin. Here comes the judge, the third-party neutral.
National writer Matt Fortuna, hey, please bestow your wisdom upon us.
I have the final say. I'm going to echo everything you just said, Pete, and I said this when we recorded Saturday. I'm like, give me a few days. I need to really dive into this. If you're picking Notre Dame right now, you're doing it basically on blind faith. Like, if you look at the numbers through the material of this season, like, how is Notre Dame going to move the ball without a couple deep passes, which they weren't able to do all that effectively last week against Purdue? I mean, number two rushing defense in the country, number one, number eight in yards per rush. Like, Notre Dame just can't run the ball. They're number 22 right now in yards per carry. They've given up 14 sacks, number 128 in the nation. It's going to take a week one Graham Mertz performance for Notre Dame to have a chance to win this game. And Notre Dame's defense may be capable of forcing those mistakes and making that happen. But I got to go Wisconsin based on everything so far. 21-17. The line, so I guess that's a Notre Dame cover, and that's the under. It's 46.5 and 5.5. I think we can all agree.
Thanks for predicting a shootout, Matt.
Yeah, compared to you.
So we can be entertained.
Compared to you two, it is. The loser will lose their deal with Mission Barbecue, which I imagine has as much buyer remorse with Notre Dame's offensive line as Wisconsin does with picking Graham Mertz over Jack Cohn right now.
Ouch.
Yeah, and I'll be interested. Like you mentioned sort of the Wisconsin dynamic. If Notre Dame wins, then I think, and they play well, at that point, I think you're looking at Notre Dame. It's hard to look at the rest of the schedule and figure out, okay, wait a minute, this is where I would pick them to lose the rest of the way. Look, Matt and I have watched Notre Dame in person together last week. You know, I've been to, cover the Toledo game, was down in Tallahassee. You can't fake your way to 12-0. So at some point, Notre Dame will lose. And this weekend is where it makes the most sense because the matchups are against Notre Dame in a way that I don't think anybody else on the schedule can make the matchups go against Notre Dame like Wisconsin can.
Here's the thing. If Wisconsin does win this game, Jesse, I don't know if you've heard, Brian Kelly is one win away from breaking the Notre Dame record for coaching wins. We're gonna have a fun podcast week after because Brian Kelly's clinching win could come against Cincinnati, the school he left to go to Notre Dame, and that's going to be a whole nother wave of storylines that we get to write and joke about next week. But I'm looking forward to this game. I mean, I picked Wisconsin because I just think based on two games, that's the safer pick. But we say we know a whole lot about both these teams so far. I think we're kidding ourselves. And the fact it's a neutral site, it's an early game, you've got game day, you've got the big noon kickoff, it's going to be a cool environment. I'm really looking forward to this week. I'm looking forward to being with you two, obviously, as well. But it should be an awesome environment. Better than anything we've gotten at Soldier Field, I think, in the last couple of years, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I feel like the more you guys talk, the more I'm regretting my pick, but I have to stick with it. And I think some of it is that maybe I'm just in the weeds too deep, that I'm examining Wisconsin's flaws and just wondering if they're going to rear their ugly head at a bad time against Notre Dame. Because one of the strengths, I think, of Jack's game is delivering some of those deep passes. He did it at Wisconsin. I think we've seen him do it early in his career at Notre Dame or this season. And even Jim Leonard, the defensive coordinator, mentioned that in that Purdue game, there were four or five chunk plays that really turned the game on its head. And one of the plays that he mentioned was the throw that Cone made, the 62-yard touchdown pass. At the time, it was a one-possession game, and all of a sudden he hits a guy in stride, and boom, it's a quick hitter, and now it's a two-possession game. And I still am questioning how good Wisconsin's secondary can be, despite the fact that there are so many returning players. Wisconsin released a preliminary status report on Monday, and there are two starters in the secondary who are questionable, and neither one of those guys played against Eastern Michigan. Cornerback Fayon Hicks, who to me is the most versatile defensive back they have. He can play in the slot, he can play outside, and safety Colin Wilder. Now, I ultimately don't know what their status will be come kickoff, but if you don't have those two, I think that changes things. And I go back to what Wisconsin was ineffective in against Penn State with some of those big plays and the miscommunication. And then the other thing is, I mean, the passing game with Wisconsin right now, I just have no idea what to expect with this group. And for as solid as the running game has been, you can't be one-dimensional, in my mind, and beat Notre Dame. You can't just run the ball. You can't hand it off 15 times on the first two drives and expect to be successful in the way that you were against Eastern Michigan. That's my bold take there. So I don't know what Wisconsin's going to do in the passing game. And those are the two things that I look at and just say, well, I haven't seen enough to this point, and I don't know if that means I'm finally going to see it against Notre Dame. And if I don't, I don't know that Wisconsin wins. So that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I mean, just that deep shot ability of Jack Cohn. I mean, we're talking about Graham Burch. Jack Cohn has attempted 22 passes of 20 yards or more in the air so far this season. And last week, I mean, you mentioned the hit to Avery Davis. There was a drop by Braden Lindsey where Jack Cohn threw a perfect, I believe it was like a 40-yard bomb, hit the receiver open in the hands, in stride in the end zone, and he dropped it. Notre Dame does that. It hits that, which has nothing to do with Jack Cohn, right? Like, but if that score clicks, I think we're sort of viewing Notre Dame a little bit differently. They end up beating Purdue by 20 points. So it, if Notre Dame can protect Jack Cohn, then I think he can hit Wisconsin's secondary in some big ways, because Notre Dame's receivers were really bad last week with drops and just a poor performance. I would be surprised if that happened again. But man, you watch Notre Dame, first play of the game, Purdue's running a 3-4. They have two kind of average inside linebackers. What do? They both blitz up the A-gap. One of them runs untouched and just blows up Jack Cohn for a sack. Like, first play of the game type stuff. So if that happens, it's, you know, you wonder if Notre Dame's going to be able to protect Jack Cohn at all to take these deep shots. And if they can't, then that's how Wisconsin probably gets out of this game. And we're watching something that is played in the mid to low teens. So, on that note, Jesse, I hope to see you on Friday night in Chicago to celebrate
the Shamrock Series.
Not being at home. the Shamrock Series, Matt. That's what we'll be. Yeah. Yeah. Under Armour jerseys, I guess. But, there's plenty to look forward to on Saturday. I think I say this only half jokingly. I kind of wish it was a night game, only because the atmosphere at Soldier Field would be ridiculous. I don't need to cover any more night games, but if there was going to be one, this would be a great atmosphere.
I will interject and say, since I can roll out of bed, I really appreciate the 11 a.m. start. I will also say we made this entire podcast episode so far without mentioning Tyler Buckner, which means he's probably going to be the deciding factor for better or worse in the Jack Cohn bowl. That's inevitable right now.
Yeah, and then the final will be 35-31. All right. On that note, Jesse, thanks for joining the Shamrock. We appreciate you. We will we'll see you this weekend. And if the game is completely ridiculous, we'll have you on our post-game show as well from the press box at Soldier Field. So he's Jesse Temple. You can read all his good stuff on Wisconsin at theathletic.com. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by Matt Fortuna. Thanks for being with us on the latest episode of The Shamrock.